Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and this is episode number 453. Today, I'm just so excited to share with you the conversation I've had with Rosie Grant. She is the cemetery TikToker who posts under the handle Ghostly Archive. And we have a great conversation about being taphophiles, which, if you don't know what that means, a taphophile is a person who's drawn to cemeteries, funerals, and gravestones, and that sort of thing. And both of us are taphophiles, and probably many of you are as well. But we have a really fun conversation, and I think you'll really enjoy it. Before we get to that, just a couple of announcements. This is on behalf of Mary McLaughlin. She was my guest back on episode 355, and we talked about Irish keening and wakes. And Mary is teaching a six-week online class on the Irish keen, and it's starting May 2nd, so that's coming right up. But you can register for it at her website, which is marymclaughlin.com. McLaughlin is spelled MCLAUGHLIN.com. marymclaughlin.com. Again, I'll leave a link to her website in the show notes for this episode. So if you're interested, this sounds like an amazing class to learn about the ancient Irish keen with Mary McLaughlin. And I think it would be really rewarding and enjoyable to take part in it. So I wanted to let you know in case anyone listening has an interest in that. So once again, just go to the show notes at eolupodcast.com. You can look for this episode number 453, which should be the very first episode that pops up, and then scroll down to the links and you'll find what you need there. And as always, I just want to send a big thank you to everyone who's helped support the podcast over the last couple of years, either through my Patreon page or PayPal donations or buying me a coffee. I'm grateful to all of you. Thank you so much. It means everything to me. And if you're interested in making a contribution, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support. There you'll find links for those three different ways that you can make a donation. I encourage people to join the Patreon page, partly because we're forming a little community there, and I offer bonuses like the What to Watch recording, which is coming up on May 1st, What to Watch for the month of May, programming around death, dying, grief, and the afterlife, and then also the end of life news update, which comes out at the end of each month, just a roundup of some things in the news that you might be interested in. So those are two bonuses you can get by joining the Patreon community at patreon.com/EOLU. And thanks in advance for anyone who chooses to do that. So we'll move on now with my fun conversation with Rosie Grant. I'll be back afterwards with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. And here we go. Today, I'm very excited to welcome my special guest, Rosie Grant. Rosie is a library archivist and works at UCLA. She has a library science degree from the University of Maryland. But you may know her, and I know her, as a cemetery TikToker who researches recipes found on gravestones in cemeteries across the U.S. And you can follow her on social media at the handle Ghostly Archive, and that's also her website, ghostlyarchive.com. So, Rosie, welcome, and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I've been following you on Instagram for a while, and reading the stories of where you've traveled and looking at all the recipes that you've discovered on gravestones. So for me, this is really a treat to get a chance to talk to you and learn more about what you're doing. But I'm just so curious about, how did you first get interested in gathering recipes from gravestones?
Yeah, very nonlinear, especially for like taphophiles who are very, you know, I feel like a lot of cemetery enthusiasts and historians have like their like thing that they start to notice after a while. And so gravestone recipes just happens to be mine. But it was during my library science program at Maryland. I had to do an internship somewhere, and it was kind of the early days of the pandemic. So a lot of the libraries and archives I might have interned at were closed, but the cemeteries were open and unfortunately busier than ever. And so I ended up interning in the archives of Congressional Cemetery, doing basically digital storytelling. They have several famous residents there. And so we were putting together this online guide, and I was just learning about different memorials and the death industry. And this was all brand new to me, really not that long ago. And then as part of, you know, the program itself, I was taking this class about how social media works and algorithms. So we had to start a fresh account, and I was talking to my professor, and she was like, you should make this about your cemetery internship. And I was like, I don't know if there's an audience for that. And she was like, there is an audience for everything. So that's why I ended up on cemetery TikTok and grave talk. TikTok was, to me, very fresh and new, also really not that long ago. And so it was this really interesting way to kind of learn about all these different other cemetery TikTokers too, who a lot of gravestone cleaners, a lot of historians and tour guides, or people who were just interested, kind of like me. And so I was posting every single day just about my cemetery and just interesting memorial stones and just things that I was learning during the internship. And then eventually I branched out into other interesting memorials. So it was very, very general cemeteries. And then I first learned about a recipe that was carved onto a woman buried in Brooklyn named Naomi Odessa Miller Dawson. And she has a spritz cookie recipe on hers. And it's this beautiful stone. I mean, her family basically had the idea to, like, you know, you might see like a Bible or a spiritual like stone and put like a quote in it. And they thought, well, why not put a recipe, her recipe on her gravestone? And it's such a beautiful just marker and memorial to this woman who loved baking, and like food was a very much a part of her love language and life. And so I cooked Naomi's and I just kind of posted about the process. And my like world exploded of so many people were like, that's it. Just, it was interesting to see how many people were engaging with the topic of like, I would put my recipe on mine. Oh my gosh, my mom would do this for hers. My grandma does this. We make spritz cookies. This is how we do it. This is our food thing. I didn't know this was a thing. And so all these people were engaging with food and death in their own like very personal way. Or even things like, you know, my dad just died. I'm making his grilled chicken because that brings him closer to me, that sort of thing. So while I was learning more about Naomi, I learned that there were a few other people who did this. And so I started cooking their recipes too. And then now flash forward, it's been 3 years. I started traveling to visit them. It was started a bit on a whim because I had family buried where Naomi's buried. And so, you know, Brooklyn is a very easy to access cemetery. But then when I visited her, there's another woman not too far away from her. So I also visited her gravestone. And then at that point, you know, it's just kind of been like, whenever I've been in the state, I'm like, well, I might as well go visit this person. And if I'm going to visit them, I should bring them their dish. I don't want to be rude, you know? So that's kind of how this has turned into. And I'm now up to 30 recipes around the states mostly. And yeah, that's the very long version of how I got to here today.
Well, I think it touched me so much that you bake the recipe that you find and bring it to the gravesite to enjoy there. And I just think, wow, that's an amazing tribute to someone and to their legacy. And it really touches my heart that you go to the effort to travel there and to bake the recipe. And I imagine if one of my loved ones, I have some aunts who are incredible bakers, and if one of their recipes was on a gravestone, I would feel so honored, and what a wonderful tribute to them for someone to come and enjoy the recipe and
totally,
and share it there. So I think that's really a beautiful tradition.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. I mean, we all have that like aunt or uncle or parent who's like the cook of the family, and even, they don't have to be the most amazing cook, but just like, when you think about your childhood, you might go back to a dish, or you have a certain cake or something at special occasions. And it's just such a powerful nostalgic tool. And like, yeah, I mean, especially like food and death, I feel like we're a lot more on our consciousness the last few years of like, we're all home a lot more and maybe cooking a lot more. And then again, a little bit more uncomfortably aware of our own mortality, for better or worse. And so, yeah, I love the idea of these families being like, this legacy is their food. And like, we're not going to just be like, she liked cookies or she loved baking, but like, here's the tools to make her thing. I'm like, what a genius idea for all of them to do that.
Really, what a way to keep a special memory alive of someone that you love. Yeah, I was thinking my aunt had certain cookies that she would make. It's not that the cookies themselves were special, but she brought them to every potluck or, family picnic, every special occasion. And if someone got sick, she dropped off her cookies. It's like that recipe becomes tied to so many special memories. And it did, they don't, it doesn't even have to be a special secret recipe. It's just the fact that those were the cookies that she always made.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Do you still have her recipe for you to even make it yourself?
I don't, but I need to add, that's such a good reminder. I should call one of my cousins who probably does.
Yes, that's definitely been an interesting side part of the project is like family food legacy. And I had no idea of like, oh wow, like document this while you can, because you never know. Like, I get so many messages and emails from people being like, my mom had this amazing recipe, or my grandmother, my uncle, and they passed away and we never learned it. But like, I wish I could figure out how to recreate it. Like in my family, we have this chocolate pie that my aunt used to make, and it was for every Thanksgiving she would bring it. And what she would even joke to us, she's like, you guys like the chocolate pie more than you like me, which was not true. She was a delight, but her chocolate pie was fantastic. Luckily, my mom had it written down. So when she passed away, we were like, hey, we're sad that she's gone, but also we're like, oh no, we never wrote it down. And my mom was like, I asked her, I got the recipe, it's okay. Like, her legacy lives on with this recipe of hers. It's so, these things are so precious.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I imagined at first when I saw this that these were like secret family recipes, maybe. Sometimes it had been handed down and everyone always wondered, what's that one ingredient that we can't name and it's we wish we knew, but the people guarded it closely and finally put it on the gravestone. I don't know. Have you found that sometimes it's surprising that there's something in the recipe you wouldn't expect?
I know it has been funny now that I've been interviewing all the families that like take it to the grave, which some of them are very like kind of like have their own internal like dark humor family joke about, which is again so beautiful. And I was looking into why are recipes often secret, and I think it's because it's special. It's like a special thing that is associated with them, and if they gave it to everyone and everyone had it, it becomes less of a special thing. And so yeah, again, like even more poignant when it does end up on their gravestone for everyone to make for themselves. So for the case of Naomi, the woman with the spritz cookie recipe, she did truly keep it a secret. This was a recipe that she had picked up, possibly from the New York Times, actually. So she had a clipping of it, but it like, even if you go to New York Times cooking, the recipe is different. So this is an old clipping that she had picked up, and her son would bring these cookies to like work parties and like family events, and everyone would ask for the recipe. Like, they're wonderful cookies, and she would always say, no, like, it's my secret recipe. And so this was truly something that like she kept secret until the end of her days, and they got permission to share it onto her gravestone from her and get the recipe. Other families, it was just a known recipe. All of them knew how to make it, they just made it regularly. And when they were thinking about, what it came to, what do you put on a stone to like mark a person's life? So it was something that, if anything, like the grandkids would still have access to it because it was carved in stone. And then there's one woman who's actually still alive. Her gravestone's up in Arkansas, but she is still alive and well. She put her gravestone up when her husband died, and they were putting on his marker, and it was all like the typical, like, he had this job or this achievement or this career thing. And then for her, she was like, I was so proud of this cookie recipe. Like, my friends would ask for it, my kids' friends' parents would ask for it. And like, it's a really darn good cookie. So that's what I want people to remember me for. So all of these really fun ways that it kind of ended up on a stone in the end.
So it sounds like you get in touch with the families, and so you're actually learning a lot more about the history of this person, not just the recipe when you go to visit the grave.
Oh yeah. If anything, this whole project has taught me, like, a grave is this memorial to like a whole person's life and legacy. And like, there's something so beautiful about that. And then at the end of the day, like, a stone can only say so much about like a full life of a person. So I've now cooked with two of the families, and I'm hoping to cook with more this year. There's a woman buried in Iowa who has a cheese dip recipe on hers. So I flew to Iowa and met up with her daughter and got to even meet like this woman's best friend who carved her gravestone. She's the town's resident gravestone carver and was very familiar with this cheese dip. And yeah, it was just such an interesting, like this person had such a full life and still has, like, you couldn't go 5 steps without someone in the town being like, oh, I have a Deb story for you. Like so many people had Deb stories. Like she, her life and memory was still so present even after she'd gone. And yeah, it was just, it was so beautiful in a way that, and it, I mean, death is so scary and for, especially in like Western society and taboo, and we feel so uncomfortable around it, but there is a really beautiful side to it too, of like this person who has like a very full life and like a really strong legacy left behind.
Yeah, that's so amazing. I mean, I appreciate that you're a storyteller. I mean, so you love gathering the stories, and I feel that way too. That's part of podcasting is I think that
Hey.
I get to hear stories, and I'm just always so inspired by them. But I'm also a taphophile. When my husband and I travel, if we go by car, especially, like I'm always we pass a small town, and I think, oh, there's a cemetery. We have to just stop there for a few minutes. Just let me look around a little bit. And there's always something amazing there. I'm always just, I see a glimpse into the community or the people or the culture,
Yeah.
just from wandering around through a cemetery, even for a short while.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, it's interesting. There's a comment that I get quite often is people being like, oh, I don't think you should go visit cemeteries, or I think that's bad or disrespectful. And obviously, you want to be respectful to the place, but you know, like these memorials are there for people to go and read your name and think about your life. And like, you know, it's meant to be this like public monument to a person. And you know, there's a lot of care and intention in taking care of cemeteries and making sure they like are welcoming spaces. And you know, even some cemeteries do tours now just so like these memories of these people are kept alive. So I love that. Yeah, there's so, and like especially in the US, there's so many different types of cemeteries. Like I just finished an Atlas Obscura class about the history of the American cemetery. And there was so many community cemeteries I'd never heard about. Like there's something called the Showman's Rest, which is for circus performers, an entire cemetery dedicated to circus performers. And
Wow.
like that, yeah, I was like, I had no idea. This is so cool. So yeah, you can definitely like, I love being able to go to a place and then being like, what does their local cemetery look like?
Wow. Oh, I had no idea. That sounds fascinating. Like that sounds like a course I need to take
We do.
just for
Everyone should.
fun.
It's
Yeah.
so fun. It's online. It's only 4 weeks. And it's the teacher is, she's on the board of the American Gravestone Studies Association. So is like, this is her entire universe and is just such a wealth of knowledge. There's, and yes, death is so, we all have to deal with this at some point. So it's not like, oh, if I don't think about it, I'll never come across it. It's so present, even though we, yeah. So in any case, there was just a lot that I was like, huh. I had no idea.
Yeah, fascinating. Well, I on the recipes, I know you mentioned one woman had a cheese dip recipe, but I wondered if most of the recipes you find are for sweets or desserts, because it seems like, I don't know, I guess those are the somehow that's the food that we cherish perhaps the most. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. I think a couple even things around that. I think it is the majority desserts, baked goods, and that partly being of like, yeah, it's like a sweet treat that people are very fond to remember. Even this like almost like strange sense of like, we're all gonna die someday, like enjoy your cookie, like kind of thing. But also,
Exactly.
I think when you carve onto a gravestone, there's only so much space. So like, you know, these aren't like 18-step lasagnas or, you know, anything like that takes so much instruction. Like a cookie recipe, especially an American cookie recipe, is pretty forgiving. It doesn't need a ton of instructions. You really just need like ingredients and some basics. And like you'll have a pretty close to dish of what the person might have made. And so, and a lot of these people too, like these are like Great Depression era-ish people who had grown up with their cooking. And so a lot of the food tends to reflect that, like pretty simple ingredients that makes like a lot of food, feeds maybe a big family. Or, you know, all 20 grandkids, that sort of thing, is definitely a trend.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. And these reminders of the sweetness of life, sometimes in the midst of pain and sorrow. And a couple of years ago, I interviewed a young man. He's a social work counselor. But when his mother died, he talked about missing so much the things that she used to bake for them. And he ended up, as part of his grief process, getting out all of her recipes and making them, baking them. And he wrote a little cookbook called The Sweetest Therapy that has all of her recipes, and he tells stories about every one of the recipes. And it's amazing. And it's so touching. And I just think that's really beautiful. And that what a great way to cope with loss and grief, to remember all the sweetness and bring that alive in your life.
Yeah, so it's called The Sweetest Therapy. I'm writing this down.
The Sweetest Therapy by Chase Cassin. I interviewed, I think it's almost been a couple of years ago.
That's so beautiful. Yeah, food is so powerful. Like, I think about that Ratatouille movie, you know, at the end with the villain, he like has a bite of the Ratatouille and he's like immediately taken back to his childhood. Like, food is so, like, when I think both of my grandmothers died during the funeral, and when we were telling stories and stuff, it wasn't as like present as then when we started to cook through the food that like they might have eaten. So like even like my grandmother was like, her family was Irish immigrants, so very steak and potatoes, meat and potatoes type of person. And when I have like meat and potatoes, I like think about her so clearly. Or if I have like an Irish coffee or yellow cake that she made for my birthdays growing up, like, it's so powerful because I guess you know your taste buds go into it, you see it, you smell it, and you just drop into the memory of that person.
Yeah, it's an incredible way to carry on someone's legacy that you can keep sharing and passing on. And then as you're doing this, like, ripple effect of having other people benefit from it as well. And it sounds like your posts went viral on social media, and you found indeed there's a big audience for what you're doing.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, it was such a strange, it was a bit surreal when the first one, if anything, it was like, oh, that's like, you know, it happened to hit. That's just how TikTok works anyways, is early on, most people would go viral, especially in the early days of TikTok for something. But even later on, I think I was really touched by how personal people's stories were, or who were interacting with it, of like, you know, my dad died. These are the things that I do when I miss him, and it's very food related. Or like, these are my food traditions with my family that we do every single year. They're so important to us. And so it was, people were being very reflective with it, which I thought was so, I mean, yeah, I guess at the end, food and death are, they touch all of us. And it's a very universal theme, even though I never before this project would have associated food and death together.
Yeah. As when you think about it, it does seem natural. It makes sense. And I love that you're comfortable, like, bringing the baked goods into the cemetery and sitting at the gravesite and almost kind of toasting the person whose recipe it is and saying, here I am, look at this years after you left this planet physically, here we are, we're enjoying what you, something sweet and wonderful that you brought to life.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to think when I was visiting Naomi's, who was the first person I visited and bring the recipe to them. It was like, I brought flowers too, but there was something that I was like, I feel like I should, you know, bring her cookie and like do like a little bit of like a thank you. And like, wow, her cookies are so wonderful. Not all of them has been as e like, so the first few were all like very easy to travel with. And it was such an easy thing to like cook and put together and then go visit the person. Some of these, I was like, what have I gotten myself into? Because there was an ice cream one in Maine that I happened to visit the day that I'd planned to visit this woman. Her name's Marianne, and she has this amazing apricot homemade ice cream recipe on her gravestone. And it was a random thunderstorm in Maine that they don't normally get super rainy summers the way that this day was. And it was like flash floods. And I was driving up from Portland, and I was just, and the ice cream was melting in the back of the car. And I was like, what did I sign myself up for? But it was really beautiful because like she's buried in this beautiful little tiny cemetery in northern Maine. It's like covered with like trees and woods. And it's just a very peaceful place. And I remember it was like muddy and I was like trying to get to her and like the ice cream was like melting in the dish. But then the moment that I was at her gravesite, I just got to like sit with her for a few minutes and then just be like, and like have a bite of this apricot ice cream and then just be like, thank you for giving me this moment. It felt like she was giving me that gift of just like a quiet, like reflective time with her. Which I mean, in the end of the day, like a shared meal with a person, even if it's like the memory of a person, felt very important to it. But I always think about that where I'm like, yeah, this started with cookies and then we ended up there.
Ice cream, that is a big deal. I mean, just transporting it on a hot day and
Yeah, there's a soup one in Buffalo that I'm like, we'll have to figure out how to do that one, but we'll see. I'll deal with that in time.
As you said, if you happen to be traveling that way anyway, that you could maybe make that happen.
We'll see. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite recipe of the ones that you've tried?
I don't, in the sense they've all been really genuinely wonderful recipes. I definitely have ones that I make the most often. So I make Naomi's fairly often. And hers has changed the most because the first time I made it, I didn't know what a cookie press was. I didn't know what a spritz cookie was. So I like made them like sugar cookies. And then all these people on TikTok were like, oh, we love spritz cookies. You need a cookie press. So I got a cookie press. And then later on, I cooked it with the family and learned I'd still been making it all wrong. So that one has evolved the most. And these like beautiful, buttery, delicate cookies come out of it. So huge fan of those. There's this one woman who has a snickerdoodle recipe on hers, and snickerdoodle was a cookie that my mom made as a kid. So this woman named Annabelle has the, and she's buried in California, actually. She has this amazing, it makes like literally 100 cookies. So I've made that one pretty often too.
Wow, those sound great. I was really intrigued. I saw the I think peach cobbler recipe and also carrot cake. Those are two that I really want to try myself because I appreciate that you post the recipes on social media at times. So that's my goal. I want to try making those myself.
Oh, you have to. They're so good. Yeah, the cobbler one is very pretty simple, which is great. A woman named O'Neill who's buried in Louisiana. Hers was very fun too because I went to there's the Food and Beverage Museum of New Orleans. And so I went and I chatted about peach cobblers in Louisiana with them, and they gave me all these recipes to compare it with, and then told me where to get some good fresh peaches at a local market. So I made it in Tulane University, and then I drove up to go visit her. So I cannot recommend that one enough, especially if you have like summer peaches. And then the carrot cake. So there's actually two carrot cakes. There's a woman named Christine who has a carrot cake on hers, which is a phenomenal recipe. And her, she is still alive, actually. There's so two of the women are still alive. Her gravestone back, she has her gravestone up with her husband. And so on the front side is her amazing carrot cake recipe. And then on the back side is her and her husband's. And her husband says, I should have listened to my wife. And then on hers, matching his stone, says, yeah, look where we ended up. I'm obsessed. I'm just so obsessed with these two.
Oh my gosh, I love that. What a great sense of humor.
Amazing. Yeah, they seem like just a fun couple.
Wow. That's fantastic. I mean, this is like I want to go out right now as soon as we're done talking and go visit a cemetery near me
Oh, I
because,
love
you know,
that.
I never thought of looking for recipes because I wonder if there do you have any clue of how many there gravestones there might be out there with recipes? I never thought of looking for that before.
Yeah, I don't know. I basically at this point now I have this gigantic Google Doc of like, and I'll get even like comments too of people will be like, oh, I print, like some people will like kind of flippantly be like, oh, like I see these all the time. And I'm like, do you do where? And they're like, well, I saw your post, so I assume they're all over the place. So I've the 30 that I've found, I have like a confirmed name of who this belonged to, ideally their obituary, their find a grave link. So like I have the location confirmed, the cemetery they're buried at confirmed. Best case scenario is when a family reaches out and they go, yeah, this is my person. Here's a photo of them. Like, let me tell you about them. And then so like I have this like kind of weird map. There's a few that I've heard rumored are out there. Like someone was like, oh, they're all over Louisiana. And I was like, I went to a lot of Louisiana cemeteries and I only know about this one, but maybe there are more. Like there are so many cemeteries out there. There's apparently a chocolate chip cookie somewhere in West Virginia. There's some sort of like fudge pie in Michigan. Again, people will comment this, and when I follow up, they're like, "Oh, I heard it from a friend of a friend. I'm not so sure." And there's another cemetery expert named Abby, who she writes about the Ozark cemeteries and Arkansas cemeteries. And we were joking about this because she studies specifically gravestones for people's limbs. So, like, if someone's there's this really random thing out there of like someone's arm or leg gets amputated, and they'll have a gravestone to mark it. In Virginia, there's a few of them, and the Ozarks, there's a few. They're just kind of weirdly around. They're definitely very niche as far as the gravestone. But she also was like, yeah, I'll hear about like people will be like, oh, these are all over the place. And she's like, they are. Like, I thought I have all of them confirmed. Do you know where they are? And then the person will often follow back up being like, well, they're kind of all over. So as far as gravestone recipes, I would assume there are quite a few others out there, but yeah, unless either a family reaches out, I usually don't know about them. But it is interesting all the same though. And there's quite a few even like food adjacents, like ones that have people's favorite brand or even like a beer logo or like a whiskey reference or things like that, which is very fun to see.
Oh, I'll bet. I'm sure sports teams too
Big
that people
time.
are avid fans
Yes.
of. So, if anyone listening is aware of a gravestone with a recipe on it, would you like to know about that? Is that.
Oh, yes, please. Yeah, if people know about them, even if there's just interesting cemeteries or gravestones that people just think are beautiful, my Instagram and TikTok are full of comments of things like that, which I always love to see. So yeah, specifically if people know about any recipes, please let me know. Like, that's so cool.
Yeah, so that's Ghostly Archive, and everyone should just follow you just because the posts are just really touching, and it's just a good way to remember that there's sweetness in life and in death, and various ways that we share with each other and connect with each other around death and dying. And I noticed just recently, I think you posted there. I'm sure there are other things that you find in your travels and your explorations, but you posted these amazing videos of a stained glass ceiling. Was it inside a mausoleum?
Yeah, so I was visiting San Francisco, Oakland for a tangential gravestone recipe. There's a guy, Joe Sheridan, who invented the Irish coffee, and his gravestone mentions he gave the gift to the world his Irish coffee. So I was like, oh, I'd like to see it. And we have his recipe. So I made an Irish coffee and brought it to his grave. And while I was in Oakland, there is two different mausoleums and columbariums. There's one called the Chapel of the Chimes. And Chapel of the Chimes is, it was redesigned by, I think it was California's first female architect. Beautiful. It's just this gorgeous stained glass. And people are basically put in urns that are the shape of a book. So it looks, they call it the Library of Dead, colloquially. And it's just such a stunning place you can walk through. So that's in Oakland. And then there's a second, and San Francisco is like one of the most, like, as a like a cemetery enthusiast, I was just like constantly blown away by San Francisco. So San Francisco back in like the 20s moved all of their large cemeteries to a necropolis, which is called Colma, which is just south of the city. And so it's a city of cemeteries. It's literally it's 17 cemeteries. San Francisco now I think technically has one cemetery or two cemeteries left that are like smaller, just because all of that was developed into like housing and other spaces. But a lot of the gravestones got put into like the fabric of the city itself. But yeah, in any case, since Coleman now has all of these fairly recent cemeteries, there was a lot of like modern architecture and design that went into it. So I was in Cypress Lawn, which had this like basically Tiffany design, these insanely beautiful stained glass ceilings that you can get the key from the cemetery and walk through and see them. And it's so, I didn't know the word awesome, like the word awe in awesome. I was just like, it was speech defying. Like, I was so blown away by how beautiful the space was.
It's even apparent in the videos that you took. I just can't imagine being there and seeing the sun shining through that stained glass. How incredible that was. And who would know that such a gem is just sitting there, kind of under lock and key, but waiting for other people to discover.
Yeah, completely so. I think, I mean, Cypress Lawn is one of the samples of like modern memorial parks that people might be familiar with that are like leaning towards more like people are getting cremated more and more, but like they can still be very beautiful memorials for whether it's for family members or for people just connected to a person or a place or anything like that. And yeah, you walk through and like there's statues and there's gardens and they still have cemeteries too. So they just have kind of a little bit of everything. And you drive through the town and it's a cemetery town. All the industries are like gravestone carvers or funerary or florists or like hearses, like whatever the thing. It's just like such a death industry town, which I've never seen something like that before.
No, I haven't either. And that's so fascinating. I just had no idea that that even existed.
Yeah.
Wow. Oof. What, yeah. what a wealth of information that you've been able to gather. And it's such a different lens to look at the history of a place through their cemeteries. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah. I mean, it's funny because now of when traveling and you go to visit a local cemetery, they're all, it's so cool to see. Like I went to, my friend is from Lima. So we did a Peru trip. And it was beautiful to see the local cemetery there, which are all columbariums. And they have these beautiful like shadow boxes that people will decorate with ashes of a person. And like they'll have photos and toys or, you know, memory pieces of this person. And I was like, that's really cool too. And yeah, you go to like Europe and they have very beautiful old cemeteries. So anyways, death is endlessly interesting.
Yeah, it really is fascinating. And the fact that we have through time created these visible markers in the terms of gravestones of death. And I remember looking at older cemeteries and seeing, oh, that's when there was a flu pandemic, you know, in the early 1900s, and seeing how many graves there were from that particular year in time. I got to visit the American cemetery in Normandy after World War II.
Wow.
That was very, wow, very sobering and very touching to be there. And so it's just a different way of viewing the history. But for those of us who aren't afraid of contemplating death and being near reminders of death, it's very rich and very deep.
Yeah, completely agree. And I'd imagine your lovely audience is probably at least on some healthy level of engaging in these topics. And I think on some, like going back to like the sort of social commentary on cemeteries and gravestone recipes, I think on some level that was why it got picked up so much. And so many people were kind of engaging with it, because for a society that death is still semi-taboo and like fearful around it, a recipe as far as like that conversation feels a lot easier. Like my family is very uncomfortable with death. We don't talk about death, but we can talk about like, well, how do you want to be remembered for your cooking? Or like, let's cook this recipe together. Like it's a very easy way to engage with harder topics because it's so for the living. So it doesn't feel as morbid, but also a healthy kind of avenue to explore something that we should be talking about anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes so much sense. And I know one of the grief rituals I've read about is just on your loved one's birthday, make their favorite food and share it with people who love them. And what a wonderful way to just remember them and relive some of the very precious times that you spent together.
Exactly that. Oh, I love it. It's crazy how much food, just kind of allows us to like, yeah, exist in a memory.
Yeah. Well, I value food for as just a gift. No, I mean, a way to show support to people who are experiencing grief too. I feel like that's one of the most important things we can do. Just bring them some kind of food, a comfort casserole or cookies or, you know, something else baked, because everyone needs to keep eating and it's hard to cook for yourself when you're grieving, and having people who care about you bring you their special recipe, it can be really soothing and really supportive.
Yeah, it's great. Like that's been another interesting kind of side avenue, is learning about like funerary food and funerary food traditions. I also hadn't thought too much about that, but like the Texas sheet cake, which is a funerary sheet cake that people might make for like the days of mourning, and it feeds a lot of people and it's made with ingredients you'll probably have on hand, and it can sit out for the whole day if you're taking in mourners into your house. It's very comforting. Or there's the Utah funeral potatoes being another variation of that, which I hear people eat all year round. But this idea that like you have cheese and potatoes and all this good stuff in your fridge, and you can throw it together, and it's very comforting. And easy to just have during a day of like taking in mourners.
Wow, I really like that. Well, I understand that you're putting together a cookbook, which I think all of us would love to see. And tell us more about that or what you have planned.
Yeah, so I'm currently attempting to put together a cookbook. I do have these 30 recipes, so it's pretty much traveling to, the goal is to visit all of these people and their places that they have their markers. I partially just to confirm it's there, but also I feel like I get such a strong sense of place of who these people were. Obviously contacting and interviewing all of the families, and sometimes one interview will be like, oh, then you also have to interview their best friend or their sister, or like, so it's a fun like web network that kind of will come out of one phone call. So yeah, that'll be the next year is learning everything I can about who these people were.
And then those stories, I imagine, will be in the cookbook along with the recipe. So,
Yeah. Well, that's the hope at least.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds amazing. So we'll follow you along for more information about that. But that's probably one reason why you could use more recipes if anyone out there is aware of a gravestone recipe. And maybe if they could send you the actual location where it is so you're not having to research it all.
Yes, please. That would be amazing. I'll take anything that we can learn about. Yeah. It's been all crowdsourced. So yeah, literally anything people know about is always so helpful.
And how do you research cemeteries and like where things are located? Because that, I mean, many of them are so large. How do you find a particular gravestone when you get to a cemetery? Are there any tools for that?
I mean, find a grave has probably been the most, sometimes find a grave has a geo coordinates attached to it. Sometimes they don't, generally the vast majority have not. So I do have like the person's name and the photo of the gravestone, just to kind of confirm that this is like a real person in a real place. I've been sent two photoshopped ones actually that were confirmed of not, they were like fabricated. And so in any case, very well intentioned, I think people found them on the internet. But as far as like researching them, Find a Grave has been the most helpful. And then I will literally use it to map of like what I see in the photo. So it might be a tree, it might be a large stone behind it, it might be a building. And so that's actually weirdly been very helpful for just locating them in the vast wide. Like, so some of them, if I see trees behind it and like there's only a tree line on one side of the cemetery, I'll be like, okay, it's on this side of the cemetery. And yeah, it's been very, very nonlinear in the process, I should say.
Yeah. So, I mean, it takes a lot of time, I'm sure, to actually do the research. And then if you're traveling, do you go back? I mean, you have to go back maybe to an Airbnb or someplace where you have a kitchen so you can make the recipe once you validate it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, so some of the ones that I've traveled with, like the two in California, since I'm based in Los Angeles, I made the snickerdoodles and I made the carrot cake and I brought them with me, and the carrot cake lasted surprisingly very well, despite the 2 day trip up to go visit. It's the peach cobbler one, basically I was in New Orleans for a conference and I was staying in Tulane University. So I made the cobbler in the dorm kitchen and drove it up. The rest of them, the cookies, the breads have been pretty easy to travel with. The cheese dip, I had an Airbnb, so I made it with the woman's daughter. The fudge, I had a cousin who I was visiting nearby, so I made the fudge in her kitchen. And then, yeah, the ice cream one was the most challenging.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But that's part of the process.
Actually, fudge, I find really challenging. I love fudge, but I haven't been able to get it to turn out exactly right. It's too often sugary. So there's some secret to that that I just don't have yet.
Yeah, I'm looking to interview this woman who has the fudge recipe. I've talked to her granddaughter, but I'm looking to talk to her daughter now just to be like, what am I doing wrong? Like, I'm sure I'm missing some very normal key ingredient.
Yeah, there is an art to some of this as well, you know, and you think of of people who've just made the recipe 100 or 1,000 times, there's certain skill they have that it's going to take us a while to be able to recreate that.
Exactly.
Well, I just love hearing about this, and I feel excited and inspired, and I actually want to encourage people out there who are not taphophiles yet, try just spending a little time in a local cemetery because it's so amazing. They're really peaceful places, I find. And just wander around a little bit with an open mind and open heart and see what you discover. But you will find stories that unfold right before your eyes just from looking at the gravestones.
Yes, I could not agree more. There's so much care that goes into making them beautiful spaces. So yeah, respectfully follow all the rules of the cemetery, but enjoy your time there. They really are so peaceful.
Yes, definitely. And who knows what you'll learn or what you might get interested in or excited about. Maybe you'll begin collecting gravestones from some other type, some other niche.
Sky's the limit.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Rosie, I'm just grateful that I was able to learn about your work and get connected with you because it's been really meaningful and inspiring to me, and I think it will be for other people as well.
Thank you so much for having me. I love the conversation so much.
Yeah.
Like, I feel inspired even just for your words on it and like the thoughts of like what grief processes can do. Yeah, that's, anyways, it's been an honor.
Yeah, it's been really fun, and I'm looking forward to your cookbook coming out, and I'm definitely going to be on board for that. And I hope people out there will connect with you too, and then let you know if you see any recipes on gravestones.
Thank you so much. Yes, please.
Yeah, thank you. It's just been a pleasure to talk with you. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Rosie Grant, and I hope that you will be inspired to check out cemeteries near you, as I said during the interview. It's just so fascinating, and it's a really fun hobby and a way to add some extra depth to your travels when you go to new communities, but also to learn more about your own community by visiting local cemeteries. If you enjoy going to cemeteries, if you're also a taphophile, send me a message and let me know where you visited and what you've seen, anything interesting that you have seen in cemeteries around you. I'd love to know more about it. And if you find gravestone recipes, don't forget to get in touch with Rosie at ghostlyarchive.com. And I'm going to be looking for those now myself. I never thought about it before, but I'm going to be on the watch so I can tip Rosie off of some place, more places she might want to travel to. If you enjoy content like this, please be sure to share it with other people who might also benefit from listening. And make sure you subscribe and leave a rating and review wherever you happen to listen to the podcast. That's very helpful so that we move up a bit in the rankings. Don't forget, I also have a YouTube channel called End of Life University. If you like watching videos, you can go there and see the videos of me and my guests talking to one another. And sometimes some people find that interesting. So I'm trying to grow my YouTube channel. I'm already over 8,000 subscribers, which is really exciting for me on YouTube. So if you haven't subscribed yet, check it out, become a subscriber, and maybe sometimes you'll be motivated to want to watch us talking together. I'll be back next week with a new interview with Dr. Bob Uslander. We're talking all about empowered endings, his unique palliative and end-of-life care model. And I played an older interview with Dr. Bob back in December, but this is a brand new interview talking about how things have changed and what he's offering right now in his medical practice. So that you'll find that really interesting next week. Until then, remember, we're here for love. That's really what all of this is about. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of your very precious life. Bye-bye.